You're listening to Jai Long, and this is Make Your Break. Hey, welcome back to the show. Today, I'm going to repurpose an episode from the Metamorphosis podcast. This episode in particular is actually with my co-host, Kara Mia, and she dives a little bit more into my story and what makes me tick, what makes me an entrepreneur and so driven with all the things that I do. What are my failures? What are my wins and everything else? If you don't know too much about my story, it's pretty wild, to say the least. And I would love to share with you some of this stuff, because from the outside, sometimes we see people and we think they're successful and they got all the things. And we don't know that they are just like us and they go through the same thing. And they also have to overcome a lot of struggles and stuff like that. So I like to share a lot of those things, because when I was coming up, I wanted to hear that other people were just like me in the same position that I was in and all that kind of stuff. And even today, I want to hear all of that. So the Metamorphosis has its own podcast. It's called The Metamorphosis. And we're actually releasing a course and a whole bunch of things on the 29th of May, which is really exciting. But guess what? We're doing a live launch from Utah. We are broadcasting from a live shoot with Kara Mia, and we've got some guest speakers and a whole bunch of things, which I'm really excited about. Now, it's a paid event. If you do want to go and check it out, we got a link down below. I would love for you to go over and check that out. It's going to be something that you've never seen before, because, you know, a lot of these paid events, well, a lot of these events that you see, in particular for photographers, they are a Zoom call, and or pre-recorded, even worse, just like a pre-recorded video that gets sent to you. This won't be like that. This is going to be like on location with cameras following us around, doing a live shoot. I'm going to have my iPad with me so I can see all the comments, so I can write back to people, so I can talk to you. And it's all about you that's watching from home, which is really cool. Now, if you've ever wanted to go to a content day and you've never been able to and you want to see what it's all about, well, now you're going to be able to. And we've got some other really cool treats in store as well. So I'm so excited to show you this new program and everything else. Now, once again, this episode is from the Metamorphosis podcast. And if you haven't subscribed to that yet, there is a link down below. I'd love for you to hear it. But other than that, let's get into today's episode. I'm Jai.
And I'm Kara.
And this is the Metamorphosis podcast, limited edition series, where we talk about everything content, mindset, and creativity.
Yeah, and today we actually want to do a deep dive on Jai. Who is he? Who is the man behind all of the things? So tell us a little bit about you, starting with your name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I've got an interesting name. My name is Jai. Not many people's name is Jai.
I haven't had a single Jai.
Yeah. And one interesting thing about it, when I first came to the US, no one could pronounce my name. So they would always say, John? John? No, it's Jai, just like sky. No, yeah. Like Jay? Okay, yeah, Jay. So a lot of people call me Jay, but...
you just let it happen.
Yeah, if it rhymes with sky or pie,
yeah.
My name is Jai.
I like it.
Yeah. And I think like sometimes like having a special name kind of makes you feel special, and it's like pulls you apart a lot. I've noticed like some people with like really unique names, like I always remember them and their name.
That's true. And did you like your name growing up, or was it something that you disliked?
Sometimes I disliked it, yeah, because it was really hard. But to be honest, I was always different to everybody, and the name was, it made sense. It was like, of course his name's Jai.
Yeah. Well, this has been a lot of fun for me over the last couple of weeks, because I feel like I've gotten to know more of you. Mm-hmm. And then the more I get to know you, the more interesting you become. I would say you have the most crazy stories of anybody I've ever met. Mm-hmm. To a point, it feels like you've lived a billion different lives. But can you tell people a little bit about, where did it all begin? Like, you're very entrepreneurial, probably one of the most entrepreneurial-minded. Again, entrepreneurial is a really hard word.
It is, entrepreneurial.
But you're minded that way. And you have been for a while, right? Like, tell me where
forever.
It started. Yeah.
Well, I think everybody starts somewhere different and out of a different necessity. Mm. So there's like two main things that like drive us really as humans, is we're either trying to go towards a dream or we're trying to get away from pain.
Oh.
And I've always like... super successful entrepreneurs, but also myself, I've got both. So you get pulled and pushed. So I'm getting away from pain, but I'm also going to like a, you know, it's like a compelling future or a compelling goal or an unrealistic goal. So with that, it means there is no time to stop, because if you're getting pushed and pulled, you got double motivation to sort of get somewhere. So this all came about because like when I grew up, there was like a lot of turbulence. It was very nomadic, and we lived in cars and houses and buses and tents. And my sister was born in a teepee, and her family,
really?
Like we lived in a tent. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was very, like, unique and strange. But out of a lot of it, like, my childhood was amazing. I've got to say, like, I really love my childhood and I love, like, growing up. The way that I did, like, there was not really any rules and there was a lot of love in my childhood. Like, one thing that my parents did really well is I feel like with all my brothers and sisters, I feel like they're all so kind and there's a lot of love and they're very open and I'm very proud of that as well. It's, like, a nice place to be. Like, you know, my dad would always say, like, Jai, I love you and things like that. It was never, like, a weird thing. So that was really good. But then on the flip side, there was also, like, tough times as well. And for me, like, when I turned about 15 or 16, like, I just felt like life got really hard and I was in and out of schools and we're living in, like, government housing. And my dad at this stage, and this is, like, something that I never really told anyone, but he, my mum and dad, like, broke up. They did a lot of times, a lot of domestic violence, a lot of drug use and stuff. Yeah, and so my dad actually went away to Sydney and he wrote me a suicide note. So he said he was going to, like, commit suicide. And I remember, like, a few weeks later, this is before text, you know, everything else. A few weeks later, I got this snail mail and it was addressed to me and I read it. And I remember reading it and quickly hiding it because I didn't want to believe it. But also I hid it because I didn't want my brothers and sisters to see it. And so for, like, 6 to 12 months, I actually thought that he passed away and I was, like, trying to hide it from everybody else so it wouldn't cause anyone pain. And it was, like, a really hard time for me. And he just showed up, like, 12 months later, like, and as if nothing ever happened. And, yeah, it gave me a lot of trust issues and things like that. But it was just like, what the fuck? I remember talking to him. What happened? And he said, oh, I remember that night. Yeah, I actually did get high and I woke up and I felt better than I've ever felt. And I was like, okay, well, thanks for letting me know. Where's the letter? But, yeah, yeah, like, one more letter, please. Yeah, just joking. Well, YOLO.
Oh, my gosh, it's so sad.
I know, it is really sad. But not because of that reason, I kind of did grieve him quite a lot. And I had this, like, at this time, like, wasn't the best relationship with my mom, and I felt like I was put in a position where I was, like, the parent of the family, and
oldest, right?
I was the oldest, and it was, like, really hard, I think. And so I kind of got to a point where I was like, enough is enough. I'm going to take full responsibility. I can't be a victim, and I need to go and get a job, and I need to go and, like, change my life. So I got this cool story of, like, my first hustle of, like, becoming an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. So I moved out of home and I lived in town in a halfway house, and, like, next door was a duplex. Next door was, like, the biggest drug dealers in town. And it was, like, a real rough place. 5 guys living in a 3-bedroom house. You know, I shared my room with another guy and it was, like, hilarious. Anyway, I kept telling everyone, man, I'm changing my life. I'm going to go and do some cool stuff. I'm going to be an apprentice. I want to become, like, an apprentice plumber or electrician or a carpenter. It was, like, my ambitious goals. Anyway, to put it in context, those were kind of impossible for me because one, I was uneducated. I didn't even get my high school certificate. 2, the town was so small that even if you did get a high school certificate, you'll be chosen first for any kind of trade work. But it was like, there wasn't any openings.
The odds were against you at this point.
Very against me. So everyone telling me it was impossible. And I always said, well, I don't think so. Like, I'll be able to make it happen. So
you thrive in that, I think.
I did. And so I was working with, at the time, this guy that was actually, when I was growing up, when I was younger, I was a Hare Krishna. So that was, like, my religion and everything. And so I was working with this guy that was this Hare Krishna and he was a builder. And I was working with him for a little while. And every afternoon, because I didn't make enough money even to live out of home. So every afternoon I'd go down to the phone booth and just a payphone, and I'd ring out of the yellow pages back then, just different businesses. And I'll say, you got an apprenticeship? You got an apprenticeship?
Wow.
And I did that for about 6 months, like, relentlessly. And then I got a phone call one day. Oh, actually, when I was talking to someone on the phone, and he's like, man, I don't have an apprenticeship. You've already rang me like 3 times. And he's like, but there's a new job site in town and it's an art gallery and they're looking for laborers if you want that. And I was like, oh my God, this is my chance. So I rang up my boss and I quit my job. And I was like, boss, I'm quitting. I've got a new job. I'm going to be a laborer at this new thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. I rode my BMX, like, over to my mom's house. And that was, like, 20 minutes away. And I got to my mom's house. I'm like, mom, can I borrow the keys of the car? I got a new job. Now, bear in mind, I was about 16, but I didn't have a car license.
Okay.
So my mom was like, oh, all right. Like, you know, she just let me go, grabbed the keys. I went into town and I bought myself new boots. I remember, like, with the last bit of money that I had, and just, like, a little work uniform. And then I drove around to the site and I had a look to see what time it opened and everything. And I knew it opened at 6 a.m. and everyone got there at 6 a.m. So the next day at 5:50 a.m., I'm driving in, no sunlight yet. And I see all these big burly men cruising up and it's just like silhouetted. There's like a light up the top and I can see everyone. And I've never been on a job site like this. I was a small guy. And I was like, shit, man, I was kind of so scared. And I'm like walking up with everyone. I got my lunch with me, my work boots on. And I asked one of the guys, like, where's the job site? Where's the boss? And he's like, points to this, you know, this little construction building that's on the side of a hill. And so it was on the side of a hill and then it was like stepped up. So it was like extra tall. And I remember I went up to it and I like knocked on it. And the guy opened it up and he's like looking over the top of me and he couldn't see me because it's just dark as well. And then he looks down and he's looking at me and I can just see the look on his face. And he's like, what do you want? And I was like, I'm here to start my new job. And he's like, what? And I'm like, I heard you need a laborer. I got my boots on. I got my lunch and I'm here on time, ready to start my new job. And then he's like looking around to see if it was a joke, I think. And then he like calls me in. Then he asks me like, how old are you? And I was like, oh, I'm 18. And he's like, are you sure? And I'm like, well, I drove here. I've got a car. Like, I couldn't be if I didn't have a car, I couldn't be. And he's like, all right, well, you look really young. He's like, all right, I'll give you the job. And so he gave me the job and he's like $15 an hour. And I heard that was like me getting rich, $15 an hour. Like, that was $600 a week. So I'm sitting there, and I remember like the grin on my face. But I didn't know what a laborer did.
Oh, no.
So I was like, sweet, I got the job. Anyways, like, all right, I'll come and see you later on. Like, get on site and just get to work. And I was like, sweet. So I got on the job site and I'm walking around and I literally don't know what my job is. And so I start asking people, I was like, guys, do you know what a laborer does? And they're like, well, they like sweep the floor and they get the tradies things. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was like running around sweeping floors and just doing things. But what I did every day, I had that job for 6 weeks. And what I did every day was I went around to every single tradesman. And I said, how can I help you? And do you have an apprenticeship? So I just brought value to everyone until one day, a couple of people would like trial me on with like little jobs that they had. But a lot of them said like, you're too young, man, to like be an apprentice. But one day this builder came up to me and he's like, man, I see you relentlessly asking everyone for an apprenticeship. He's like, I've actually heard there's an electrician and he's looking for an apprentice. So it's like, I thought I'd just let you know on this, you know, gossip, but that's sort of the story. He's like, here's his number. So I went down to the job office and I quit my job. And I was like, quit my job. And he's like, why? And I was like, because I'm becoming an electrician. Anyway, and then I went and rang up this guy and I was like, I heard you're looking for an apprentice. Like, what day can I start? I can start tomorrow. Like, I've got no job. And he's like, oh, okay. He's like, well, I'm not looking for anyone until like 3 months' time, but I'll give you a call back. And that I just quit my job. So I had to do it.
Yeah.
So I said to him, look, you don't have to pay me, but I'm going to be there tomorrow. That's non-negotiable. I can just work for free if you need. Like, I can like do whatever it is that needs to be done. I'll be there. I'll see you tomorrow. And I remember I hung up the phone. The next day, mum's car again, drove out there. I knew he started at 7 and then I was there at 6:55 and, you know, knocking on the door. My name's Jai, here to start. And I think it worked probably for a few months for free.
Really?
Until finally he was like, okay, you can start apprenticeship. It's going to start after the Christmas holidays or whatever. And congratulations. And to be fair, I had no experience. I didn't know what the tools were. I didn't know anything. And he kind of seen me as like, well, this dude's so ambitious, but he's also got no idea.
Yeah.
And a few things that people said is the neighborhood I grew up in was like really rough. And he said, like, if I knew where, like, you came from, I probably wouldn't have gave you the job. And I remember I got a second job, like, delivering pizzas so I can, like, make ends meet. And they said the same. They're like, if you didn't lie on your resume, if you told us where you lived, we wouldn't have given you the job because we get robbed on your street all the time. You know, like, little things like that. But for me, that's where entrepreneurship was just, like, the necessity of me changing my life and not taking a no and, like, really pushing myself into, like, creating a life that I wanted and taking full responsibility.
Well, I find that really inspiring and it just really checks out with the person that's sitting in front of me now because you're doing that today. And would you say that is your superpower, that you just are kind of tenacious? You just show up and you do it and you make
it. It is interesting. I see people that grow up in rougher neighborhoods have this tenacious, audacious
drive. It's like this.
Yeah, like drive. Yeah. Or like personality or whatever it is and or trait. And I've seen that like with a lot of my friends, like I know a lot of my friends, they won't take no for an answer. And they're just very much like, this is the thing I'm doing and everyone else can get out of my way. And I've had that, but I've also learned to have a lot of empathy for other people as well. Cause sometimes like you can like push too far. But for me, like I've always let go of my ego, cared less of what people are going to think of me, and cared more about like my own success and like how can I like feed my family and how can I look after myself and how can I be proud of myself? Because like at the end of the day, I'd be more proud of myself if I pushed myself into a situation, which I have been, where I've been an absolute laughing stock, but I got through and did the thing I needed to do. Mm-hmm. And here's an example of that,
yeah,
actually.
Tell me, please, yeah.
This is one of the toughest moments of my life. And it, I don't know, no one probably can relate to this because it doesn't really make any sense. But when I signed up to become an electrician, I was 16 years old. Usually you don't start until you're at least like 18, 20. So I was 16 years old, didn't finish school. One of the first speeches when the teacher came out, because you have to do college one day a week, he came out and said, if you don't have grade 12 maths and you didn't do really well in maths, you just will not pass. And he's like, I don't hate to be a naysayer. It's just the truth because I've been here for years and years. And he's like, most of you guys, 80% of you guys are not going to pass this apprenticeship. I'm sitting at the back, I'm the only one that's like, that's me. And I was like determined. I'm like, I'm going to pass it no matter what. Like, I'm going to do this. So that first year of college, I failed and I failed miserably. And my boss was almost going to fire me. But I was like, look, I'm going to pay for my own first year. I'm going to do it again after work.
Yeah.
So the second year I did second year college and I had to do first year. So I had to do the whole year again. And that was like embarrassing being there with the first years, you know, like literally sitting in both classes. And then at the end, there's this test and it's called the capstone test to like pass it all. And it's like everything you've ever learned, it's practical, it's theory, it's like 4 hours long. And then once you pass that, you get your license. And I failed.
Oh no.
And I was like one of the only ones.
No.
Yeah. And I failed and it was so miserable. And then.
How'd you feel in that moment?
Yeah. Like it was like, I wasn't good enough. And
did you want to give up? Was there any part of you that was?
I wanted to give up, but I wasn't going to give up.
Okay.
So I went and got a second job. So then that way I could pay for tutoring. Mm. And then I hired a tutor, a maths tutor, to like teach me maths. And then I was like, I'm going to enroll in next year and do it again. And so I did. And then the next year, everyone, like when I walked in, everyone laughed at me because people usually, once they fail, they usually give up. They don't want to be the laughing stock.
Mm.
So I was the only one that came back and I was a laughing stock. And so everyone laughed and I went in. They're like, there's the guy that like failed. And I sat there and I did it all over again. And then I failed.
Oh no.
Again, yeah.
I hate this story.
I know. And it was so embarrassing, like so embarrassing. I never did schooling. Like, you know, yeah. It was, I didn't really know how to read and write properly until I was like 20 years old.
Yeah.
Like this is like the level that I was at. So I was like, you know, trying to learn how to do maths and everything. And so for me, third year came around. I remember my teacher, he was like a really nice guy and I had to sit the exam again and everyone heard of this guy that's like 3 years in a row, hasn't passed his thing, why hasn't he given up? And I walked in and everyone started laughing. There was probably maybe 50 people in there sort of thing. They're all just laughing at me and stuff. And the teacher looked at me because he didn't think I was going to come back in. And I remember the look on his face and he's just standing there staring at me as I'm like standing there like waiting for him to give me a spot. And then he looked around the whole class and he's like, everyone, shut up. And he's like, this is what it takes to get somewhere in life. And so he like sat me down. And the weird thing was I was really good at the practical and I got like 100%, but the theory I really struggled on.
Yeah.
Anyway, that exam, I finally passed. And I remember he was like, I couldn't believe that you showed up and I couldn't believe that you were unfazed by everyone laughing at you and you just did your thing. And like that really stuck with me. But his name was Norm. And I was like, Norm, I was never going to give up, man. I'm trying to change my life here. Regardless of what people think of me, I will continue to show up until I get success.
That's actually really inspiring and beautiful.
Yeah.
And I definitely think it, in the context of this course, it applies to creativity as well.
Like, it does.
You have to be able, you fail, failure, right?
Yeah.
Like just talking about it, it's hard to admit, like, okay, I failed once, I failed twice, and then you kept coming back, right?
Mm.
What's the lesson there? Like, what do you wish more photographers, videographers, creatives knew in general about failure?
Honestly, I think failure, the only thing that's scary about it is the perception people are going to have of you. It's the ego.
The laughing, yeah.
The laughing. And like for me, because I grew up in a place where like I had no ego because I was no one. Mm. So there wasn't anything I was losing. They weren't like denting my ego because I already knew that I was a piece of shit that came from nowhere, that like I already knew where I was and who I was. So if they're laughing at me, I was like, yeah, man, like that's good. You know, do the things that you need to do. I know who you are. I know who I am. And I'm trying to get somewhere. And I think like, honestly, I think people overvalue themselves, but they really overthink what people think of them. Like they think like they are the center of the universe. And
I think
like,
that people are thinking about us all the time.
And they're always thinking about us. And it's like, even if everyone did laugh at me for like 5 minutes, like I was never going to give up on my dreams because someone you know, wanted to make a joke out of it or whatever. Like, it's like you've got to be so strong in yourself and really know who you were or are. And I've always known exactly who I am. So I've always been in situations where, you know, things don't go right or I really fail, but it's me disappointing me, not me being scared of the disappointing other people or how I'm going to be perceived as well.
I really like how you articulated that. Tell me about your career as an electrician. How did that end up panning out for you?
It was actually really hard. So to sort of finish that story as an electrician, to finish my apprenticeship, I actually quit my job and I was like, straight away, as soon as I finished my apprenticeship, I was like, I'm going to start a cafe. I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to be a business owner. And I did. Anyway, 3 months after starting that cafe, my license never came through. And it turns out my boss actually told me that because I failed so many times, like I'm not going to be able to get my license. And this like whole story dragged out. It got like harder and harder for me. And he said, if you can come back and work with me for 3 months on apprenticeship wages, then you'll be able to finish your apprenticeship. So I had my business and everything. So I had to go back and work for him. Anyway, so while I was back there working, it was really hard. I had to quit the job. I had another job as well. So I took a big pay cut. Oof. And a couple of months later, the board of fair trading that actually like give you the ticket and give you a license rang me up. And they said, why is your boss holding back your license?
Ooh.
Like this shouldn't be happening. Yeah. Ooh. And I was like on a job site by myself, like running this job site. And I remember I've never been so angry in my life and just like felt like, you know, trust is all gone, everything.
Yeah.
And I remember I like rang him up and I was like, man, I know the truth now. Like you were the one holding me back and you're doing it so you can get cheaper labor.
Oh my gosh.
And so I rang him up. I was like, meet me at your house. And I went to his house and I was just, you know, sitting there and I was so angry. And his wife was like, are you okay? Like, do you need help? And I was like, no, I'm just waiting for him to come back. And then I'll talk to him. And he just never came back. I sat there all the way until dark.
Coward. What a coward.
He just never came back.
Yeah.
And so I was like, fuck, okay. He's not worth my time.
No.
And anyway, I ended up ringing him up the next day and I'm like, ring up Board of Fair Trade and get my license reinstated. I'm not going to say anything that you did or anything. I just want it to be done. And finally needed my license. So for me to become an electrician was literally actually the hardest thing possible.
That is so hard.
And also there was like 70 people that started their apprenticeship with me in college. And I think it was under 10 people that passed and I was one of them.
Wow.
Yeah. So like the people that actually went through and actually got their license at the very end. I was like, I fucking made it. It took me a lot of time.
And what kind of an electrician were you? Were you pretty good at it? Or
yeah, so once I like got my apprenticeship and I like finished all of that, I started my own business and then I worked for someone and I worked my way up to becoming like the top of the top, as in like for electricians.
Yeah.
So I was like doing electrical engineering, like I was doing, I was running big teams of like 20 people on my own job site and doing $1 million jobs. And it was like pretty wild. Like I had a reputation. Everyone knew, like, you know, in the electrician world, I was like a famous electrician, like the young guy that literally like runs the whole thing and blah, blah, blah. And once I got to the very top, it felt nice to be there. But I realized really quickly, I was like, well, that's the end of the road for me. Hmm. I just feel like there's no more growth and I quit my job.
Ooh, you quit. So you made it to the top after all of that effort.
Yeah, after all of that heartache, everything. And then finally, like, it was so fucking hard, man.
Wait, that's
like,
so interesting, though. So for you, the second you stopped feeling like you could grow, you needed to find something new.
That I could be at the bottom again.
Talk to me a little bit more about that. Is that something that's been just, is that where you thrive? Is it that face of like, okay, I'm now at the bottom again? Like, why are you drawn to that?
Drawn to that for a few different reasons. But if you think about the metamorphosis, a lot of people think that like we are in a stage and then that's it for the rest of our lives. Mm. So if I think about when I was an electrician and like even before that, it's like I was the egg. I had no idea what tools were.
Yeah.
Then I was like the hustler. And then at the end, I finally became the butterfly. And then I was at the very top of my career. But you can't sustain being at the top of the career. And like, what happens from there? Like, it's really hard to reinvent yourself.
That's
so
true.
For me, it was like, I need to just be a new person. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done the hustle. I did the things I needed to do. And I want to try something completely new, which was creativity. And I knew business at that stage because I like understood business, but I was like, I'm not creatively fulfilled. So I want to do something that in the arts. And I don't care what it is, and I'm just going for that. And metamorphosis, it literally was like that feeling of being brand new. No one knows who I am. There's no expectations. There's no ego. There's no awards. There's no accolades. There's no nothing. It's just me against the world, me against me. And it's like when I'm at the very bottom, I look at the top, and I'm like, man, that's going to be a fun adventure. Mm-hmm. So like I love climbing to the top. I'm like, how high can I go? How good can I get? Like, honed in can I get into my craft? How many friends can I make? And it feels fucking like amazing. Yeah. It feels better like doing that than being at the top, I think.
Yeah, because you're really proving to yourself, this is what I'm made of, yeah. This is what I can
do. This is where like characters build, like creativity is like exercise, like confidence is built, like resilience, like you learn so much about yourself. And man, like my photography career, I've got to say, like I've been around for quite a long time now, but I've got to say, like I feel like when I look back at my career, I've probably hustled more than most people, but I also have had it hard, like probably harder than most people in terms of how much hate I've got over my career, how many roadblocks I've got, like how, like there's been just so much. And for me, I only see the positive, but I see all those challenges as like, here's the new thing I've got to overcome. And here's a new story. And here's how I can like relate when I was an electrician or a cafe owner or whatever it was to this. And I can flex my creativity to problem solve.
That's so interesting. We've been talking about that, though, with creativity, that it really is all about limits and challenges. That's where you actually really find out what you're all about. Mm. And so I think that's interesting to see the practical application of that from your life into this. What would you say when it comes to, we've been talking about marketing. That's, I feel like, one of your superpowers. When it comes to that, how would you relate that back to the creative process? Like, why is that even important?
Marketing and sales is like the two most important things when it comes to business. But also it's really important to come to like with creativity. Yeah. A few different ways. Like, I mean, one way is like, obviously you got to get attention for the work that you create. You got to sell your ideas to people. So I see it really important like that. But for me, marketing has always been a creative outlet for me. That's why I loved it so much. Because business to me, like I don't love business. No. People think I do.
Yeah, I thought you did.
Yeah, people are like, oh, Jaja, he must just love business. I'm like, no, I don't. I don't love business. Yeah, no, I don't.
What do you love?
I love creativity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so what I love is making something that's not creative, creative.
I love that.
Okay. Yeah, so it's like
gamifying.
I'm gamifying. I'm like, wow, like I can see this so creatively. And if I can play with it like this, it's no longer scary or hard. And I don't know how to read and write and math. And I'm not like educated and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, it doesn't matter though. I'm just being creative. So how can I think different around my marketing and sales, my business? Mm. And then the more creative I think about it, like I have imagination, man. I think of my business as a ship. I'm a fucking pirate and I'm just out there like in the storm. And I'm like, I've got a crew with me and it's just really fun and it's an adventure. Like all I see is business is like a big adventure and just playing. Because it's definitely not me showing up in a suit and being all professional at all. So marketing has always been like, wow, what cool things can we do to get people's attention? And it's like, how can you break that and hack that? And I've done some funny things over the course of my life. Like one hilarious thing that I did was on where my cafe was, it was like a little hidden spot down the road. And we actually submitted in a plan to council to get a like a tourist information sign for my cafe and they rejected it. Mm. So I actually went online and I had a look at how the tourist information look, like the street signs. And I went to a sign writer and I got it printed out, like a massive billboard sign. And then in the middle of the night, I went down to the side of the road and I dug two hole posts and then I put in my own sign and concreted it in.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then the next day there was a sign, like a tourist sign that just went to my cafe. And then the neighbor hated me because there was a cafe next to me and I just didn't even put them on there. But it's like never taking no, but also just thinking like that to me was just like creativity. Like this is like a fun way of doing it. And I knew they were going to take it down and they'll probably get in the news. And I knew that it would make a story and I knew that it would gain attention and everyone would talk about it in town. And it did bring in more people. Just something simple like that cost me like almost no money.
Interesting.
Other things that I did at the cafes, like we put on like big music festivals and would have like hundreds of people coming in and buy tickets and, you know, would sell. We'd work out how to sell like alcohol and would sell chai. And I had things like Jai's chai.
Jai's chai.
Like all these little things. And it was just like really fun to gamify. And I got addicted. That's when I was 20 years old.
Oh, that's
because
cool.
I didn't know that like business was supposed to be businessy. I was just like, oh, you just make it up, don't you? And so now I still work like that. I'm like, why can't we do it like this? I'm like, no, Jai, that's not the way it's done. Like, who's doing it that way?
Who says that?
Yeah, who's saying that?
Are they with you?
Like, I literally was like, that's not the way it's done. Like, people, I'm like, what people?
Behind you.
So I'm basically with marketing, I'm always like flexing my creativity.
Innovating constantly.
Innovating, not like just imitating. And I think it leads to, like, I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of things that I do, it seems to be like the first of its kind, or it's like done bigger or different to other people. And for me, like, that's where I thrive. It's like,
It's unknown.
It's like I'm tethering all the time of like, I don't understand what it looks like and how it's going to work. Like, it makes no sense to me. There's nowhere I can copy. I can't watch YouTube. There's no tutorials. You got to make it up. You're building a path and then almost failing. You know, it's like, is it going to work? Like, I just don't know all the time. So it's this, it feels like a balance all the time. I'm always balancing. I'm like, oh man, I need to do a little bit more marketing or something.
What's going on? Yeah.
Yeah. And I just love being in that space because it puts me in a space where my back's against the wall and I have to create. And
you don't have a choice.
I've got to get creative.
Okay, talk to me a little bit more about this too, because we've talked before about following intuition and gut feelings. Mm. When you feel something in your gut, you're not wrong, right? Like, that's usually, you're like, okay,
yeah, this I'm is always right.
Tell me a little bit more about that. Like, how do you even quantify that to somebody that's like, oh, I don't know, you know?
It was really interesting, actually. I heard a podcast. I think I shared this with you. I heard a podcast. And I'm going to butcher this, but I really resonated with this concept, but I want to share a concept that I heard. So essentially, this concept was with a psychologist, and he was talking about how really innovative entrepreneurs and really creative people that are doing like big things, they tend to be less evolved.
And yeah, what does that mean again?
Yeah. So less evolved means basically, as technology and as society has moved forward, everyone's sort of evolved with it. And even though it's moved so quickly, it's hard to evolve. It takes a long time for us to actually evolve. So the way that it works is, like, if you are super evolved to today's world, then you are comfortable because there is no threats. You are happy to sit there 9 to 5 on a chair all day. You're happy to get plugged in and just keep it safe. And that's just, you get rewarded for that. Like, that's just like how it's supposed to be. You can sit in a classroom without making noise. I couldn't do that, right? Mm. So less evolved people, like myself, is you're more in that fight or flight, but also you are hunting all the time. Mm. So you're actually out there hunting, which means you're looking for opportunities, which means nothing gets past you because you see everything. So with that in mind, what happens is when you are hunting, let's say I'm in the forest or something, you know when you know eyes are looking at you?
You can just feel that.
You can feel it?
Yeah.
So we have these instincts inside of us, especially if you're going back and you're less involved, you've got these instincts where you're like, you're open, your senses are open to everything that's happening around you, and you're picking up things like people's body language or how they present themselves or like a whole lot of things, right? Anyway, you can't really quantify it or explain it, but the way that we explain it is, I've got this gut feeling about something. Mm. Like, I don't know what it is, but what it is, it's a makeup of everything that I've seen around me. And it could be like a marketing trend. It could be the way someone's talking. It could be something new that's come out. And you see all these things and the way everything works. And you're like, I don't know what it is, but I feel like it's going to go this way. Mm. And it's made up of all the unconscious decisions that your brain, or information that your brain's pulled in because you're always hunting. Does that make sense?
No, it does.
So you see it.
Yeah.
So every time I say I go against my gut because it makes sense on paper, I'm like, it makes sense on paper. The math's doing the maths. So I should just do this thing. It never works out for me.
No.
But the moment that it doesn't make sense on paper, I can't make sense of it, but I feel like it's right and I feel like I need to do it, it always has worked out, like every time.
I can't tell you how relatable that is. There's so many moments, every single time I can think back on where I didn't trust my gut, I had a feeling, and you don't know why, right?
You don't know why.
It's almost like you're fighting against it because you're like, well, it makes sense, why?
Yeah.
But then I will always regret it every single time. Whereas all the other times when I thought, okay, I'm going forward with this, this is happening. Just thinking back to even like COVID, when I quit my full-time job and then COVID happened, I was really confused because I'm like, my gut said, this is what I should do.
Yeah.
But what's going on?
But the world is saying no.
The world is like, what are you doing? And yeah. I just lost all the work that I had planned for this year. And then that's where, that was my most successful year actually. So that's interesting. Do you have any examples of that though? You like followed your gut, didn't make sense.
Literally everything, man.
Like that's your whole life actually. Yeah.
Everything. Like when I think about like, I don't know, like if I thought about like even the wedding photography summit that I created, I sold tickets for $7 and it cost us $150,000 to produce in a time that everyone's locked up and, you know, in lockdown, all this kind of stuff. Like the whole thing, when I looked at it, I was there with my team and I remember I was doing the maths and I'm like, well, they always go like, what's the ROI of this?
Yeah.
I'm like, there is no ROI. I can't make sense of this. Mm. And they're like, but why are you saying you should do it? I'm like, I can't make sense of it, but I need to do it. Like it just makes sense, you know? And so I think my team and employees and people around me, even my wife maybe, were skeptical at the start with my decisions because they always went against the grain. Mm-hmm. But now I feel like, especially this last 12 months, maybe, I feel like everyone's more in tune and they're actually believing me more. Like, oh, okay, what does your gut say?
They're asking.
Yeah. So what does your gut say? And then I'm like, it's a no or it's a yes. And so it's cool to see people trust that vision a little bit more, opposed to just the ROI. There's no magic that happens in ROI. When I say ROI, return on investment.
Yeah.
There's fucking no magic, man. Like when someone goes, I'm going to build an Instagram following for you and like the ROI is going to be this and we just need to post some beautiful photos or something. I'm like, you have quantified this thing into something that no one's going to follow.
There's no heart.
There's no heart. Yeah. There's no soul.
It's
and
robotic,
like,
yeah.
it ain't going to work, mm-hmm. you know? And so the way that I work, I'm like, I see the numbers and they don't make any sense, but the magic's over here and I can't make sense of the magic because that's all the unknown. But I'm like, but something over here can make this work.
Yeah.
Because it just can, you know?
And it does, right?
And it does every time. Like every time.
Yeah.
I got this guy, he's like a strategist that works with me. And he shows me all the numbers and the graphs and stuff. And he's like, it's not going to make sense and this and this. And at the end, he's always shocked. He's like, I don't know how you did it, but like we paid for everything and it did make sense in all these ways. Mm. You know, and the interesting thing is I don't know how it's going to pay off. So one example is the summit we put in. A lot of production value and we overspent on everything and everyone's saying it should just be a Zoom call. Why you spend like $7? People don't expect this. And I was like, I don't know why either. But fast forward to like last year, I was in Los Angeles and I got to meet some people for the first time, like people that came to those summits and other educators. And what I didn't know was what we did back then built our brand.
Oh.
So the ROI was like, they're looking at the numbers. But when I met everyone, I was like, people are like, man, you're known for like, producing beautiful things and creating stuff and you change my life and all these things. And I was like, you can't quantify that. It doesn't make sense on paper. I like just built the brand, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, but now it's this magical thing where I've created something and people see it and they want to be part of it and then everything expands. And it's like I'm in magic land, basically.
I mean, but isn't that what magic is? It is a little bit of the unknown.
Yeah.
Because the second you try to put an equation on magic, it takes the magic right out of it. And so that's so much of creativity, I think, is feeling fear, creating anyway, going all in and expecting the best, hoping for the best. And even if you fail, getting back up and continuing, I feel like that's amazing. Talk to me a little bit about how important it's been, though, to have a team on your side. Like, has that changed your own growth? Because you were kind of a one-man show for a while. Like, when did that shift?
I think, so for me to get a team, it was really a learning curve because I don't know why, and I don't know where this mindset came from, but I was kind of taught where you got to be like self-made and there's an award if you're like self-made, you can like, there's like bragging rights. And it's so far from the truth. Like I think when you're self-made, for an example, no one's self-made. Like I didn't really have anyone help me to get me where I am, but I had a lot of people help me, you know? So it's not, I could say I'm self-made, I'm a self-made millionaire, but I'm not, man. Like I had so much support from my wife, from my mom, from my brothers, my sisters, from my friends. Like there's so much kindness from so many people. It's a mentor just giving me one thing that helped me get to somewhere, you know? It's all I needed. So I think it's false thinking that we're self-made and we've got to do everything alone. And I think it's like, again, it's like tied up to the ego thing. It's like, no, I can't outsource anything because I'm the best at this. You know, no one could possibly do it the way that I can do it.
Yeah.
And I had to let go of those beliefs because I did believe that. Like I was controlling everything. So I had to surrender and go like, Jai, you're not the best. You know, like there's people that are better than you at the thing, but you got to make them the best. So how can you facilitate them and so they can be the best versions of themselves so then they can bring something that's different to your vision to the table, then you can collaborate and then you be partners with all your employees. So now I do have lots of employees, but the way that I see it, it's like building a superpower team. It's like the X-Men or it's the Avengers. It's like all these people that come with different life experiences and different education and different ideas and creativity and we can get together and brainstorm and it's like things I would never see. And me opening up the space for them to be equals and to have like no silly ideas, like no idea is silly. And they can just like, they can experiment and play. And like, it's not like they got to start at this time and do whatever, you know?
Yeah, I'm a dictator with it, yeah.
Yeah, and with that environment, I feel like everything just gets bigger and better and it's more fulfilling for me because I'm now creating more opportunities for people. Like, you know, the more income that comes in, the more I can hire people. I personally think, and this is my train of thought, and I know this is going to go against people, and I know people hate hearing this kind of stuff, but I think when you're trying to be self-made, I personally think it's selfish, like not bringing people in on the journey, or selfish not like creating more resources and success to share with other people. Like if I started making money, like when I first started as a wedding photographer, the first thing was to hire people. Because I was like, man, it's selfish for me to try and take all the money and then that's it. Like I want to give opportunities to my bookkeeper and to my editor and it just gets bigger and bigger. So every time that we get more money in our business, like right now I'm like, wow, once we sell another course and like maybe we get some more money, I'm going to hire a designer. Like I want more people and I get to like create employment and amazing spaces for creatives to work. and be creative. And that's fucking cool.
Well, it is cool. And it comes back down to something we've also been discussing recently, which is abundance mindset versus scarcity. Mm. And it does feel counterintuitive. And there's another thing that you said. You said, I had to learn to let go of my ego. And I feel like that is so much of what metamorphosis is about, actually. It's not only what you're bringing in, you know, oh, I'm staying inspired, I'm doing all these things, I'm taking them in, but also, what am I letting go? What am I shedding? You know, it's like the caterpillar is going to molt 5 to 6 times. What are you leaving behind? What doesn't serve you? And when you do that, you're making space for all these new things that can come in because you're not holding on to them so tight. But let's talk about that. Abundance versus scarcity. How have you felt? Which mindset do you tend to fall into? I'm guessing it's abundance. But tell me more about that. And what have you observed?
Yeah, I think I grew up with parents with very scarce mindsets, that like everything was going to run out, because it did run out. We were very poor. We like lived on food stamps and handouts and all that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of like things that my dad would say over and over that was like very scarce, which was like, money doesn't grow on trees. If it was that easy, everyone would do it. Don't believe everything that you see, or like, you know, there was just so many things, right? And always thinking someone's stealing from something from us, or they're going to take it, or they don't give away that idea, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I changed my mind on everything because I was like, I can't really take financial advice from my dad, which literally had no money ever.
Ooh, that's
like,
cute.
We didn't even have fucking food
or Christmas
presents. Yeah. And so what's really interesting is if you look around, even now that I'm older, a lot of my friends' parents that like worked a 9-to-5 and then invested and they got a house or whatever, now, and they told me not to be risky and you got to, you know, do the things, they all have no money. And so when I look at that, I'm like, is everyone just like blind to the fact that the system's broken and that doesn't actually work?
Yeah.
And so that all started around about 15 years ago when I started like questioning things. I was like, did people learn something at school that I don't know?
Yeah.
And so I obsessed over learning money and just like mindset. And once I learned it all, or like it took like years, but once I read a whole lot of books and then one day it just all clicked for me and I was like, wait, I just think everyone is like sold a story that doesn't really serve them, and that's why everyone stays in the class that they're in and no one's like breaking out of anywhere.
Yeah.
So for me, like, it's changed everything. One thing, my dad was actually really generous of a lot of things, and one thing that he taught me, which really helped when I was a kid, and this is a cool story. I think I was like 12 years old and I was working as a gardener and I was like, I was picking weeds and everything, and I think I was getting paid $5 an hour, and that was like 10 hours worth of work, and I've never had this much money in my life. I was like rich.
I'm rich.
Yeah. And I said to my dad, I came home because he never had a job, right? So I came home and I was like, Dad, I got $50. Like, how, I want to get $100 now. And he's like, well, what would you want $100? You got 50. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I think I can do it. I think it's unrealistic, but I think I can do it. And my dad said, well, Jai, learn to let go of the 50 and then you'll get 100. And I was like, what? And he's like, what can you do with the 50 right now that, and, you know, to help someone, and then you could get $100. And so I was like fully perplexed and I didn't understand it back then. I was like, all right, well, it doesn't make sense, but I will do this. Anyway, I went out the front and I was thinking about it. And like back then, so 12 years old, I was thinking about like, I'm going to have a gardening business or something one day. But the neighbor's lawn was really long and I had a lawnmower, like my parents' lawnmower. And I went over and I was like, hey, so I'm just doing this thing where I'm just like, want to help out. Like, I got some money. I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll go get some gas for the lawnmower and I can just like mow your lawn. Like, what do you think? And he's like, sure, that sounds awesome. So I got the $50 and I went down and put in like, it would have been like $5 worth of gas. And, you know, and that was like, you know, it's probably like 20 minute walk away, and I'm walking back with the gas and I put it in the lawnmower and I spent the afternoon just mowing the lawn. And then in the afternoon he came out and he's like, man, you've done such a good job. I want to give you this. And he gave me $100.
Oh, he gave you $100 to mow his lawn?
Yeah. That's amazing. Literally just like, and I was like, got the money and I was like, what? Like, I let go of the 50.
Let go of the 5, actually. You only had to spend
exactly. But but in my mind, I was like, just let go of it and just like do the thing. Mm-hmm. And then what came back was like the goal that I wanted.
Yeah.
And I was like, how does this work? And Dad was like, see, it always works. Like, he's like, it's not about what you'll take. It's what you can give.
Oh, that is huge.
Yeah. And for me, it like gives me goosebumps literally saying it right now. Yeah. Like literally does. But I think about that. I'm like, man, the mindset is everyone thinks, what can they get?
Always.
What can they take? What can they grab?
What can people give me?
Yeah. What can people give me? What can I get out of this?
Yeah.
And that mindset now was, and this has been my whole life, it's like, what can I give? regardless if I get anything back. Mm. Like, just give and give and give. And so I've done that my whole life. And now, like, I've got more success than I need because I've given more than, you know, so, than sometimes that's realistic, you know? So I think it's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. Yeah. I definitely say you're a giver. What is the whole giver, matcher, taker? Where's that from?
Yeah, there's a book. It's called Give and Take. Really good book. Mm. But here's a funny story. Like, sometimes it doesn't really always work out, but I've always had that mentality. And just to finish up on giving story. So when I had the cafe, Lilu and I, so she's my now wife, we were running this thing and we got so poor where we sold our car and we're living in the cafe and I had to get another job and stuff. So it was like really struggle times. And I remember just near our house, it was really hard to go and get groceries for the cafe. So I had to like borrow people's cars. It just made it so hard to run a business with no car. And I remember one day I was coming home and there was a car out on the road and it was $500 just out near the cafe. And I was like, this is a sign. Like, we need a car. So I come back and I remember I run into the shop and I was like, Lilu, can I please like grab $500 out of the till so I can get this car? It's going to make life so much easier. And she's like, well, we don't really have $500. I'm like, look, I can grab everything that's in there and like we'll make it back this weekend. But like, it's just out there. It's just going to change the game. And she's like, okay. So I got all the money and I ran out there and I negotiated. It got a little bit cheaper, I think like $450. And he took the money and I like went back and showed her the car. And it was like this brown, like Chevy kind of thing. And she's like, oh, yeah, cool. Well, here's a grocery list. We need some groceries. I'm like, sweet. So I drive in town, get some groceries. And then on my way back, there's this hitchhiker. And he's like sort of walking alongside the road. And I was like, wow, I've got a car. I've been hitchhiking as well a lot.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll pick him up. So I picked him up and we start talking. And I was like, man, like, what's happening? And he's like, oh, one of my, you know, big unrealistic goals one day, Jai, is like to get a job. He's like, right now I'm like homeless and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, well, what needs to be true for you to get a job? And he was like, man, like, honestly, if I just had a car, like, I'd be able to get a job. I was like, really? And I was like, you just really need a car and you'll be able to get, like, because he lived in a tent on my street.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it and I was like driving home and I was like, man, this dude really needs this car more than I need this car.
Did you give him the car?
Yeah, I did.
You did?
Yeah, so I pulled up in the driveway and then like I was like talking to him. I was like, you know what, man? Like, I bought this car like 3 hours ago and I was like, honestly, if this is the thing that's going to change your life, you need this car more than I need this car.
And did your gut say give him the car?
Yeah, it really did. And I gave him the car. And he's like, I can't believe this. Oh, there's so much trouble. I walked in and Lila's like, well, who's that guy driving off in the car? And I was like, I just gave it to this guy that I met.
You're like, what's the homeless guy that lives right next to
me? Oh, man, she was not happy with that. Like, anyway, he ended up coming and working for it. He got a job. He ended up coming and working for us. So that was like one of our employees. He did end up changing his life.
Did he?
Yeah.
What happened?
Which was really cool. Well, he got a job with us and then he was like, one day I'm gonna get an apartment and I'm gonna get a TV. And he ended up doing all those things and he wasn't homeless anymore. Yeah. But it's just, I don't know why I just shared that story, but it's something like sometimes like you give and you don't expect anything back.
Right.
It's just like you follow that gut.
Yeah.
And it's like, what can you give in this situation? And if you don't have much, it's like there's not much you're hanging on to. So for him, when I've seen someone that needs it more than me, which is, you know, all the time people need things more than I do. And it's like, it's a beautiful thing to be able to facilitate somebody else on their journey.
It is. And I feel like that abundance is, that's what collaboration is all about. That's what creativity is all about. I've always kind of thought of creativity in a metaphorical way as like light. Like everybody has this light in them and it's like different colors and different, you know, prisms and perspectives, all the things. And the more you hang out with other people, the more that it adds to your light. It never takes it away. Light never takes away light. It just grows.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's like really beautiful the more.
Well, and like another metaphor, just like lesson from that. Mm. Like I think about like, what's the lesson there? Like I've been able to give even when I had nothing. Mm. And my dad used to give all the time when he had nothing.
You saw him doing that.
Yeah. I seen it all the time. Like he'd give everything. He'd give everything to everybody. And when I think about that, like, I think a lot of people are in a stage where they're trying to get and they're, like, trying to keep and they're trying to keep. That's the biggest thing. Like, I've got some savings in my bank account. I'm saving it.
I'm saving it.
Always saving. Yeah. Everyone's saving. And I've never saved. That's just never been my thing. So when I think about it, like, I feel like now, like, I make money from so many different things. I have so much success from so many different things. And me giving throughout my whole life has never hindered that.
Mm-mm.
Like I've never gone like I wish I didn't do that because now I'm behind.
Yeah,
I'm like, man, I'm so glad that I moved through the world with like so much kindness and I gave wherever I could, and the universe always gives back to those people.
It really does.
Yeah, and I think that's the lesson there, you know? It's like, instead of trying to say, like, the way that I say, like, saving, it's like, and money and flow and abundance, it's like, if there's a beautiful stream, and then you go, I'm going to save this, and you put up a dam, and then the dam, because there's no moving water, it turns green, and then nothing can live in it because there's no oxygen, and then you don't even want to drink out of it or swim in it, and it's like this, it's like a cesspool, and there's no energy. It's blocked energy. And the way that I see it, I'm like, man, instead of trying to save all the time and keep, what if you just let the flow go and instead just open up the mouth of the river so it's just a bigger river? It's coming and it's going. And so my river's getting bigger and bigger. It doesn't mean I've got like tons of money because it comes and goes.
Yeah.
But it means it's like there's opportunities that go past me and doors open and like there's people that come and go and I attract people and like people come and they leave. And it's just like, it's just life. There's so much energy, so much abundance. And no matter what I do, even if I lose a lot, I just look upstream and there's a lot more water coming.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
And I feel like applying that to metamorphosis, it's like a butterfly. You don't see a butterfly with its wings crunched around itself because it's trying to protect its colors and its beauty and its iridescence and keep it to itself.
No, it's shining.
It's shining and it's they're outstretched, it's open, and that's what allows it to take flight.
Mm.
And I feel like that's so, yeah, significant.
It is.
Tell us about what you're feeling right now, like just in terms of everything we've been working on.
We've been working on this course. We've been working on a lot of new things. And for me, I talk about like metamorphosis in the macro and the micro. And I feel like just in the micro right now, or even in the macro, I feel like I'm reinventing myself.
Mm.
And it doesn't make sense. And I love that about it. Like, I think that's why I say yes to things. I'm like, my gut says yes, everything else says no, just go for it. And I think it's really important for myself to keep reinventing myself, because what I don't want is to get stuck on past awards and accolades and everything else and think that I've made something, because I'm not. That's not my driver. I'm not here to go like, I am the best at something. I would rather be in the trenches like building something that makes me proud every night. When I go to bed, I'm like, oh man, I exhausted every bit of energy. I love that. Can't wait for some more energy, you know, in the morning. And then I wake up again, I'm like, more energy, I've got it back, you know.
More energy.
Yeah, more energy, yeah, more footwork. So this feels like energy. Like it feels like it's the right energy and it feels like we'll make a big impact. I feel like it's the right thing for, the right thing at the right time for a lot of people. Like that's what it feels like. Like it's this bit of magic, and in entrepreneurship and in creativity and everything, there is an element, like people say like there's no such thing as luck or anything, but there is. I think there is such thing as luck and creativity and timing and everything. And it all does need to come together at exact right moment for things to work sometimes.
That's
something special, like a big bang, basically.
Yeah.
And I feel like that with this project. Like it feels right. And this is not like from other people telling me or other people telling you, or like, you know, we did a poll, what do people want? It's nothing like that.
No.
This is like dreamed up, and if it's the wrong thing, we'll find out.
Yeah.
And if it's the right thing, we'll find out. But we don't know. There's no diligence on this kind of stuff. It's just... No. I've got a gut feeling, it feels like the right time, it feels like the right collaboration and all of that. And on the second thing, on this as well, it's like we're collaborating together. And this is the first time I've ever done that, like proper. And last year I was really in the chrysalis phase, and I just felt like I needed some rest and I needed to reflect. And it was the first year I actually went to a psychologist. And my psychologist was the one that actually said, your next level of self-jaya, because I feel like he just turns into a business coach all of a sudden. He's like, your next level of self is going to be collaboration. He's like, the reason being is because you don't have any mentors. So you feel like no one's there to help you. And you don't let your guard down because you're always perceived as you've got it and you're strong, right? So a collaboration is really hard because it's surrendering. It's saying like, I need help with things. It's saying that I'm not the best at other things. And like, I need a shared vision. And it's like letting go of like control and things like that. And so without me knowing where my journey is going, because I just never know, but I just know in the micro of my life is I need a collaboration because it's the thing to unlock my next level of wherever it is that I'm going. And that's how it feels.
Well, it's interesting because with metamorphosis, you see butterflies hanging out with butterflies, you see caterpillars with caterpillars. And I think we attract the energy.
A lot of eggs together.
Into the world.
Yeah.
No, but that's such an interesting thing, because while you've been going through all of that, I was on my own little journey doing that, where, you know, I'm also getting
therapy
for the first time, and I'm working on things and figuring out the next step. And meeting you in person was just like this.
It was like lightning.
Well, it was like a double gut feeling. Yeah, it was like a lightning strike of like, oh, I don't know what, but we're going to do shit. It was just like an instant gut feeling of like, oh, that's why I'm in LA right now.
It's so interesting how that like works. Hey? Mm-hmm. It's like two butterflies coming together and going like, hey, wait, we should create something here.
And I think we're doing.
I think it's just like a really beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. Like I think a lot of the times with projects like this, and this kind of annoys me, like people think they need a big why, or they need like a big, you know, coming to Jesus moment where they're just like, this is the thing and this is how it's all going to work. And like, this is the profound, you know, reason why I'm here and showing up. But what I'm saying is, man, if you've got a little gut feeling or something, you don't need to know the rest. It doesn't need to be like a profound thing. It's like explore that. Explore that little thing, that little spark. Go and look at it.
I think that's the biggest takeaway here, actually, with the creative process. Whatever it is you're feeling drawn to, write those things down, honor them when you feel them. Mm. Don't wait. Maybe that's a big part of it, too, because things, I can't remember if it was Ernest Hemingway or who said this, but something about writing when it's hot, like when the blood is when it's still warm, and not waiting until it's cold the next day, because the feeling is not there. Strike on it now. Like, timing is huge. And you might fail, right? I mean, with your electricity story, you might fail multiple times.
And I have failed so many times. I've definitely failed in anyone that I know ever, like anyone that I've ever known, I've definitely failed at least, I would say, 100x to them.
Yeah.
To the next person I know that's failed.
Failing.
And the weird thing is, I'm probably more successful than the most people that I know.
Because you're willing to fail.
Isn't that weird?
You have to be willing to fail.
Yeah. So if you're looking at me from the outside, it's like, here's this guy, like I perceive him as successful. He's got a business, makes multiple millions of dollars per year, and like he's doing all these things. I get to fly around the world. I get to like hang out with people.
Yeah.
I don't have an alarm in the morning. I get to do those fun things.
Yeah.
It wasn't always that way. But when I think about it, I'm like, I've also failed way more than everyone. Like way more, you know.
Yeah,
isn't that weird?
It's that willingness, I think. It's you've got to feel that fear, do it anyway, fail anyway, but ultimately follow your gut. I think that's what this all comes down to, is whatever phase you're in, at any stage of metamorphosis.
That's right.
Figure out where you need to be, honor that. And when you choose you, you will never regret choosing you. I think that's the end thing there. And you can back yourself and you learn to, right, over time. And here we are, right? We don't have all the answers to everything, but that's what makes it great. I think if we did, it sucks all the magic out of it. Magic is in the unknown.
It does. And I think I'll probably just want to end on like what you're saying there is like find the people that are in the same phase as you and make some friends.
Yes.
Like I think that is like a beautiful thing. Like I think throughout my career, my life, I don't know if I want to call it a career because it's not really a career, but just throughout my wild, crazy life, like finding friends is the thing that's propelled me forward. And
so life-giving.
Well, even just to end on this note, well, one really interesting thing back in 2016, like my career started blowing up and I was like friends with all the biggest photographers and stuff like this. And I had these guys I looked up to and they became haters because they didn't like my success. And they said, Jai, you wouldn't be anything if you didn't have the people that you hung out with. Like the only reason why you get a name for yourself is because you're with these people. And it's interesting because I was like, yeah, well, that's exactly right.
You're like, well, yeah.
Yeah, like...
True.
Yeah, I make friends.
Yeah.
And I think it's better to have friends in the industry than to have enemies or to do it alone. Like, doesn't that make sense? You know, it's like, and I'm people will come and be friends with me and I'm friends with people. Like, why would you not want to do that?
No, it becomes so much more expansive, actually.
Yeah.
And that's what's exciting, right?
Yeah.
Because if you said... You had the mentality of like, no, this has to be me. The credit has to come to me. Mm. I have to be the head honcho. That's how it is. You're closing doors.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't even make those friends because I'm like, well, I'm going to be successful and this is my thing.
You're the cesspool. It's stagnant. Yeah. It doesn't move anywhere. And we 100%. Talked about this, that if you had the biggest fear is not being, the biggest fear is being stagnant, is not actually growing and like learning things.
It's scary.
It's so scary.
It's scary to stay the same.
If you stayed the same and never let people in, that'd be the worst thing. So that's the takeaway, I think.
Thanks for subscribing to the channel as well. And if you do listen to the podcast, head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen, you'll be able to hear that. Or if you're listening to that now and you want to see what it looks like with our gorgeous butterfly background. Then head over to YouTube, the YouTube channel. Everything should be like Metamorphosis.
Join the Metamorphosis.
Join the Metamorphosis, something like that. But there's links everywhere, so go check that out. And I just want to say, hey, thank you for listening, and thank you, Kara, for interviewing me as well.
That's
really
exciting.
Cool.
Yeah, you have even more crazy stories we're going to have to share in the future, I think.
There are so many crazy stories, so we will definitely get to a lot of them.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for tuning in.